Hello, and welcome to another episode of Tech Chaos. I am your host, Krista Bender. If this is your second episode with me, thank you for coming back. If this is your first time popping in to see what is going on, thanks for joining us, and hopefully you'll like what you hear. I have one guest with me today, and today we're going to talk about a number of different topics. We're going to talk about her background. We're going to talk about weather forecasting. We're going to talk military. We're going to talk drones and unmanned aircraft. And we may even get to some movies and books and apples and beets and all sorts of craziness. So before we get into that, I want to go ahead and thank our sponsor, which is Ingram Micro. Without them, you would not be able to listen to my melodious voice today. So when you get a chance, check out Ingram Micro's website, ingrammicro.com, to find out how they can help you with your AV and IT needs. So now I want to welcome my guest, which is Christina Ng. She is the chief coolness and coolness of you.
Outstanding.
She's the chief.
I don't know. Chief Operating Officer.
There you go.
You can call what you want.
The Chief Outstanding Owl of UA Solutions Group. Hi, Christina.
Hey, Krista. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah,
I'm a first timer too. We've done some other podcasts together, but I've never done one under your new show. So thank you for inviting me.
Awesome. And thanks excited. For sticking around after I already stroked out on what COO is.
I have to say, at least you pronounced my last name correctly.
Yes.
So you get points there.
See, there you go. If you come on my show, I may stroke out on a innocent word, but I'll get your name right. So I want to let people know a little bit about you, Christina. You have a military background, and some of the people that are listening may not know who you are, and I want you to explain a little bit of how you went from piloting Black Hawk helicopters to now talking about unmanned drones in the AV industry.
So I think the first thing that we have to start off with is I'm kind of a military branch jumper, and it's because when you're in the military, you have all these great opportunities, and sometimes you just can't say no to them. So I started active duty in the Navy. I did electronic warfare, electronics, which is not my forte. I loved it, but I wasn't in love with it, I guess you could say. So when I got out of the Navy, I joined the Air National Guard because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do yet. But what I did know was I wanted to do something that would affect all aspects of life and would be able to carry me into, other things throughout my jobs. So I became a weather forecaster for the Air National Guard. And a little known fact, the Army does not have weather forecasters. And so I was fortunate as an Air Force weather forecaster that I was able to forecast for the Army. It was from that forecasting for pilots that somebody said, you really need to go to flight school. So that being said, I went to flight school under the Virginia Army National Guard, learned how to fly Blackhawks. Found myself in Iraq, and then on the border a year later, I did Operation Jumpstart on the border. Through a couple of cool little things that happened, I ended up getting into the unmanned aircraft side of the house. In the Army, unmanned aircraft was new. They didn't have a lot of mentors. They didn't have a lot of people who had been in aviation. They didn't have the background of aviation for 100 years like we had in the manned side of the house. So they really needed some mentorship and people to come in and kind of show them, this is what aviation is all about. This is what, just because you're unmanned aviation doesn't mean that you're not aviators. You are still aviators. It just looks different. So I started working with that down in Florida, and my Virginia National Guard guys and gals gave me a call one day and asked me to go back into Iraq with them, but this time with unmanned aircraft. Our orders were changed. We went to Afghanistan, and it was so awesome. It was just an amazing experience to go over there and with this new technology in a different way than manned aircraft. When I got home, the FAA hired me up in the unmanned aircraft office. I worked there for just short of 3 years, and decided to start my own consulting firm with Ms. Kelly Neubecker so that we could bridge that gap between industry and the FAA. Nobody was out there from the FAA just, you know, knocking on the doors trying to explain what was really going on. So that's where Unmanned UA Solutions Group started.
So are you still active? Are you still active military now?
So I was National Guard and decided to do an Ironman and realized that I couldn't be active National Guard, you know, a weekend warrior drilling reservist, have a full-time job, start a company, and do an Ironman. So something had to give, and what gave was the National Guard. So I went into the Army Reserves. So I'm still in the Army Reserves, but not drilling right now.
So then with the Reserves, is that still 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks a year, or is that...
No, so I'm what's considered inactive, an inactive reservist right now. So I'm kind of taking a break, a big breath, and that big breath has gone a little longer than I had expected. But sometimes, you know, other things in life start happening, and sometimes things that happen, you have to do at a certain time, and you have to just, you know, you have to weigh those options out.
Cool. So you said when you were in the Navy, you were in the electronics division. How did that happen if that wasn't what you were interested in?
So I'm not one to say no to a challenge. When I was in college, I really wanted to do mass media. I wanted to be a foreign correspondent, broadcast journalism. I went to University of South Dakota, which is Tom Brokaw's alma mater. Great school, by the way. I did that for a year and realized if I wanted to go into the military, I needed to do it while I was young, right? The military is kind of it's a young man's, young woman's sort of job for the most part. So I wanted to go into something that I had no idea about. It was free experience. And the farthest thing from broadcast journalism, I think, is electronic warfare. And it was a way for me to decide whether or not this industry that I knew nothing about, I could determine whether or not I liked it. People say, oh, I don't like electronics or, you know, any of that field, yet they've never been in it. So it was a way for me to just kind of figure out whether or not I liked it. It was only going to be 4 years, I thought, so what the heck.
That's pretty cool. Was any of that time on submarines or just ships or both?
It was, other than school, I was on two ships. I was on the USS Enchon and the USS Bataan, and both of those ships I was fortunate to do Mediterranean cruises on.
Cool. Now, I think it's pretty neat that you did meteorology and forecasting the weather, because when I was in college, I took a course in that and found it very interesting. However, it wasn't interesting enough for me to want to continue on schooling for it. But obviously you didn't like it enough to want to go be a meteorologist for television.
Ironically, of all of my jobs, it's the one that I kind of love the most, which is kind of weird. The thing about meteorology and being a weather forecaster is it touches everybody's lives every day. There isn't a morning that you don't wake up that you don't say, what's the weather going to be like? Whether you say it internally, out loud, you look at the weather, you look at your app, what's the weather going to be like tomorrow? It affects everybody every day. The other thing I love about it is it was really awesome to, you know, make the charts, because when I was going through weather forecasting, we didn't have as much technology as we do today. So we did a lot of our charts by hand. And there's something just so relaxing about that, just kind of connecting the dots of the different pressure and the different winds, and then having to visualize that both in the two-dimensional world and the three-dimensional world. I love that it's so unpredictable, and that you have these lulls, these kind of downtime when, you know, it's clear blue in 22 is what we say. It's just beautiful outside and nothing's going on. And then you have these moments of just these ferocious storms that affect everybody's lives. You know, you have flooding, you have snow, you have blizzards, you have winds, you have hurricanes. So to be in that, for anybody who's never taken a class in meteorology, it is incredibly interesting just how the air works and the pressure systems. And to be honest, when I went into aviation, the way that an aircraft flies, everything I learned in weather forecasting and meteorology, it has to do with pressure. And a lot of how an aircraft flies has to do with pressure. And the same with an engine, it's pressure. So those skills really transferred. But I love weather forecasting. I love it.
Well, maybe that could be your retirement plan.
I'll just draw like old charts off of SKU-Ts, right? Send up a weather balloon, you know. I'll get a COA. I'll call it my drone weather balloon, and I'll send it up and do old school SKU-Ts.
So I want to talk a little bit about unmanned aircrafts. As we saw last year, drones kind of, you know, made a somewhat of an implant in AV world and technology world. I mean, we heard about a lot of drone incidences in the news, whether it was, you know, drones that happened to be near a presidential, area, or if they crashed during a tennis match and things like that, and just how they were used correctly for various reasons. So since it's kind of a new thing, rules are being written up and regulations are being determined probably even right now. Help educate us a little bit with what are some of the FAA rules and regulations that we need to be concerned about with regards to unmanned aircrafts, even ones that we would buy for personal use that we would just want to tool around with in our backyards and not use for work-related reasons.
Yeah, so that's a really good point that you bring up. There are sort of these two different areas. Either you're using them for what we call hobby and recreation, or it's either hobby and recreation or it's not, right? And that "or it's not" is considered commercial purposes. And then we have this whole other realm of public entities. And public entities are Department of Defense, Department of the Navy, public universities, law enforcement, first responders. They're a little bit different. So let's not really talk about them so much right now as we build the hobby and recreation and the more commercial side of the house. So if you're hobby and recreation, the biggest thing that you need to know is Advisory Circular 91.57A. That's the first thing we tell everybody. Go and read that. It's going to pretty much tell you what you need to do, what you can and cannot do, your left and right limits. I would advise you, though, it's an advisory circular. So it's just advisory in nature. You still have to understand the aviation rules of the road. And you still know that you can get caught under what's called 9113, which is careless and reckless. Be careful. Just because you're flying below 400 feet doesn't mean that you're not going to be considered careless and reckless. So that's the first thing. The other thing that happened recently is the FAA said, even if you're a hobby and recreation, you still have to go and register your drone. So it was $5 up until recently where you get the money back. Now I think as of the January 21st-ish, you have to pay $5. You get one registration. It's for you as an individual, and all of your aircraft will have the same registration number. All right, so that's pretty simple. What we recommend with that, too, is that you join a CBO, which is a community-based organization, such as the AMA. We really like them. They're really doing a lot of great stuff for us. I belong to the AMA and DC DUG, which is the DC Drone Users Group. There are a lot of drone users groups out there, so there's the LA DUG. There's a Seattle DUG, I think. So join those sort of groups, and they will walk you through all of these processes. Now, the commercial side of the house, this is where things start getting a little bit tricky. In 2012, the FAA Congress issued what's called the FAA Modernization and Reform Act of 2012. And Section 333 is the section that we're really going off of what we call Section 333 exemptions. And essentially what's happening is the unmanned aircraft that you're flying do not have an airworthiness certificate. Because they do not have an airworthiness certificate, they sort of can't fly in the national airspace simply because the FAA hasn't said, yeah, your aircraft is deemed airworthy and can fly. It meets certain regulations, technical standards, orders, MAPS, MOPS, all these like acronyms, right? And so once you have all of that, what we do is we do a Section 333 exemption, and the Section 333 exemption exempts you from the airworthiness. From there, you have to get what's called a Certificate of Authorization or Waiver. The FAA was smart. They now put the Certificate of Authorization or Waiver along with the Section 333 exemption. And we call that a COA, Certificate of Authorization or Waiver. And the COA is from 91.113. from FAR 91113. And what that says is the pilot in command has to be able to see and avoid other aircraft. The intent of the law as it was written was that somebody was on board the aircraft looking around to clear the aircraft of other objects, other aircraft, of anything else that's up in the sky, right? Telephone poles, you know. So because unmanned aircraft are unable to comply with that, the FAA gives them a certificate of authorization or waiver. It waives them from 91.113 so long as they meet the equivalent level of safety. That equivalent level of safety is a visual observer. So to fly an unmanned aircraft for commercial purposes takes two people. To fly an OH-58 or a TH-67 manned aircraft, it takes one person, which is kind of funny. So then the other thing is, let me think. So we did the Section 333 exemption, you have your COA, and then you need your airman certificate. So the airman certificate, there are four types. You can get your sport pilot license, your recreation license, your private pilot license, or your commercial license. I'm fortunate I have a commercial license. I'm really excited and proud that I have that. But in order to fly unmanned aircraft, you only need your sport license. And you have to be current. That's the key. You have to be current with your license.
How long are licenses good for?
So your license essentially is good for your whole, for the rest of your life, right? Once you get that airman certificate from the FAA, it's pretty much good for the rest of your life. There are some stipulations. Once you get to be a certain age, they start imposing some regulations on you.
Mm-hmm. Well, but what keeps it current? Like you mentioned that your license just needs to be kept current. Is there anything you need to particularly do on top of that? Do you need to, you know, get any other kind of certifications or testing or anything?
You do. So it depends on which level of your certification that you're at. So it's usually three takeoffs and landings within a certain period of time, depending on which level you're at within that. If you're commercial, it's different than if you're a sport pilot license, sport pilot. And also, if you're above a sport pilot, because if you're a sport pilot license, you just need your driver's license. If you're a recreation, private, or commercial, you need your medical. So that's another thing that you have to make sure doesn't expire within that time.
Awesome. I had no idea that there were so many different types of licenses.
Yeah. So what we're excited about is, and everybody gets all, you know, gets all upset. They're like, oh my gosh, the new rules are going to come out and we're going to still have to have a pilot's license. Well, yeah, but it's going to go, you know, commercial, private, recreation, sport, and manned aircraft. So yeah, you're going to have an airman certificate because once again, like I said before, you're an aviator. Embrace it, love it, enjoy it. Be proud that you're a part of this organization. People dream since they're little, you know, when they're little kids, when they grow up, they want to be a pilot. Well, you know, we've given a lot of people now who haven't had the opportunity to be the pilot of a Boeing 747 to still be a pilot. They might not meet all the requirements to get their commercial license, but they can be an unmanned aircraft pilot and still, you know, be a pilot. That's what kids dream of being.
True. Especially if they haven't had the chance to, you know, do that via military or anything else, or, you know, also kids want to grow up and be astronauts, and how many, you know, people actually grow up and do that. So if they can't fly to the, you know, International Space System and station out in space, then they can, fly their drones around. So is there an easy, there's a lot that you discussed, you know, as regarding the certifications and the restrictions and how to know how to register for your drone. Can someone easily find that information by either going to the FAA website or another website? How can someone start to investigate it and find all the information they need to become better educated?
Yeah, so the FAA has a pretty good website. It's faa.gov/UAS. So once you go there, my computer's being pretty slow, especially because I'm on Zoom right now. So once you go there, you can start digging around and figuring out, getting all your frequently asked questions, right, the FAQs. Go through there, and it will tell you a whole lot that's going on within unmanned aircraft. So it's faa.gov/UAS. That's the first place that I would go to. The other one is the AMA has a lot of information.
Okay.
They're sort of the two that I recommend.
Right. So a lot of the rules and regulations, of course, we talked about are for the United States. So I would assume that rules and regulations could vary from country to country. And are you aware of some of the various rules for other countries? And, you know, are there some countries that maybe have stricter rules, some that maybe are a little bit more lenient? Is the U.S. sort of heading up the unmanned aircraft surge forward, or are there other countries that maybe are ahead of us in that race?
So that's one of the big problems that people have with the regulations coming out of the United States is that everybody says, oh my gosh, it's taken us so long to get regulations that it's hindering progress, especially from a business perspective. The one thing I have to say is it doesn't matter how much money it's hindering or how much, you know, business it's hindering. And I love this industry and I love that it's making people money. But one of the things we have to remember is the priority needs to be a safe and efficient national airspace. It has to be our number one priority, no matter how long it takes. So that's the first thing that we really have to we have to think about. However, some countries are waiting on the United States. United States, when it comes to a lot of rules and regulations, especially with new and emerging technology, we're usually the first ones to come up with the rules, the regulations, the practices, accepted practices. And a lot of countries wait on us to come out with their rules and regulations. This is the case with unmanned aircraft. Countries are waiting for us to figure out what we're going to do, and then they will follow suit. However, some countries have said, you guys are taking too long. We're just going to move forward without you. Canada and Australia, they have really leaned forward on their rules and regulations. We are a strong part of ICAO, which is the International Civil Aviation Organization, Aeronautics Organization. I should know that by heart, the ICAO.
Just like I should know what COO is.
I guess, right? So many acronyms. I need more wine. So ICAO is putting together a document about unmanned aircraft, and this is why. When you get on a Boeing 747, right, you get on your Delta airplane, like us, we're going to Amsterdam, right? You're leaving out of Philly. Mm-hmm. And you're headed into Denmark. I'm sorry, you're headed into Amsterdam.
Yes.
So our pilots coming out of the United States, if they're American pilots, remember, you might have pilots on there from Amsterdam or from the Netherlands or from another country. What we have to make sure is we have these ICAO rules and regulations that say the aircraft that we're on meets the regulations for both United States airspace, international waters, right, and for landing in the Netherlands. Right, for landing in Amsterdam.
So potentially that could be three different types of rules that they have to know.
At least. And everybody has to have this kind of consensus standard that says, yes, this aircraft meets the same rules and regulations in your country as it does in our country. Imagine if there was, I don't know, some country that had crazy regulations and their aircraft didn't meet the same airworthiness standards as they do in the United States. How would we allow that aircraft to fly over here in the United States? It has to land, especially, you know, international airports. So we're looking at the same type of thing for unmanned aircraft. If you think about a Predator drone, right? It takes off from Nellis Air Force Base here in Nevada and it flies. It does its missions wherever it does its missions. I'm not going to name any of the countries it's doing its missions, but we all know what they are. We watch CNN. We watch Fox News. We know where they're going and what they're doing. And at the end of the day, sometimes they land in Germany. So if we think that that's not going to happen on the civilian side, we would be wrong. I mean, it's happening on the military side. There's going to eventually be a reason why we have maybe an optionally piloted aircraft, something that where an unmanned aircraft takes off from one country and goes into another country. In the United States, we're so big, we don't think too much about Europe, where their countries are really small. And it's easy to take an unmanned aircraft and fly an unmanned aircraft from one country into another. So these rules and these regulations, there has to be this international acceptance on certain things that happen with both the pilots, right? Pilots have to meet certain rules and regulations. You can't have an American pilot take off from the United States and fly to, we're going to make it easy, let's say they fly to Mexico and they're trying to get a clearance from air traffic control in Mexico and our pilots don't speak Spanish, right? So how do we do that? What are we going to do? That's why English has been chosen as the kind of international aviation language.
Okay.
So same thing with unmanned aircraft. So we're talking about different countries. Mm-hmm. Now, about the timeline is so crazy. Maybe six months to a year ago, I think, South Africa was having so many problems that they finally said, with unmanned aircraft, they said, we're shutting the airspace down. No unmanned aircraft, nothing, no way, no how. I don't care if it's hobby and rec. I don't care if it's commercial. We're done. No flying until we get regulations in place. That's what they did for a little while until they could get it under control. And the difference was when they said no, they meant no. And I think it was like 15 years in jail. No questions asked. If you're flying an unmanned aircraft, you're going to jail.
And that was regardless of where they were in
I think so. Yeah. I read a couple of articles about it and I was really shocked. They just shut the airspace down. They're like, we're done playing around. We're done. And in the United States, we've kind of been like, well, we're going to tell you no, kind of. And then we'll not do anything about it, right? Because the FAA is they're overwhelmed. They don't have enough people
to
enforce this.
They don't need to be necessarily paying attention to the person who's maybe in the middle of Wyoming or Nevada that's, just flying around something a little small, They're trying to look for, things that are, like I mentioned earlier, if the president he's in town, they're keeping an eye on that. If they're keeping an eye on sporting events, they're keeping an eye on much bigger things.
Yeah. So, and the question that you have to ask yourself, and I don't know many people who haven't had a driving ticket. I've had plenty in my day, is it's the same thing as pushing the speed limit. You're like, yeah, speed limit's 65, but I bet I can get away with 74. I bet I can get away with 79, right? So we all kind of push that limit. The difference is we've all received a traffic ticket. I only know one person in my whole life who's a regular adult who hasn't received a ticket. And it's my Aunt Donna. Hi, Aunt Donna. But we've all done it, right? Because there are so many cops out there that the chances of us getting a ticket, probably one in maybe 100, right? Those odds, we all fight those odds. An unmanned aircraft, the chances of you getting a ticket are probably more like one in a million. So we're more likely to not register, not get a Section 333 exemption, fly where we're not supposed to fly. A friend of mine today, I was at a civic association meeting tonight, and my neighbor goes, oh, look at this picture that my nephew just took with his drone. And it was of Ohio State University Stadium. And immediately I pulled up on my iPhone and it says, if you fly in your stadiums, the FAA can send you to jail. I was like, I don't want to see that.
We were talking about, not necessarily drones, but somewhat in the last episode. And we were talking about privacy as well. That's a whole nother thing, even if, your neighbor has registered his drone and, he's on the up and up, but then he attaches a camera and he's going around and taking pictures, of either being close to places he's not supposed to be, like stadiums, or he's taking pictures of the neighbors sunbathing or pictures, hovering outside your window while you're changing. It certainly can then lead into a lot of security and privacy issues.
Yeah, so NTI has taken that up. The FAA said, we want nothing to do with that. That's not our job, right? Privacy is not our concern. So the White House and the organization NTIA has taken that upon themselves. But remember, we already have peeping Tom laws in effect, right? And, it's kind of this catch-22. We're all excited when we go to MapQuest and Google Earth and we see a photo of our house, we're okay with Google taking a picture of that, but we're not okay if somebody doing it with a drone, okay? But as a helicopter pilot, at 200 feet, I've taken some photos of trails, right? Because I'm a big trail runner. So whenever I'm out flying, if I'm not at the controls, I'll take a quick picture maybe of some trails that I'm interested in flying. And I'm sure I get pictures of maybe of people's houses or something. And I never thought about privacy because that wasn't a real big deal. Well,
right, because that's not what your main focus is. You're mm-hmm. not looking to see if somebody's in their swimming pool or what right. they're doing. You're looking at something else. But
if you take it with a drone, people are all up in arms.
Yeah.
So it's the societal norm of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. Can you put a camera on a stick and put it up over your fence and take a picture of your neighbors that way. What's the difference between that and a drone? Yeah, we have peeping Tom laws. Yeah, it's just something that it's odd. It's a tough one. And I feel bad for NTIA trying to come up with this.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think they're going to be developing those regulations for that and readjusting them often just because it is interesting. So earlier you mentioned, yes, you and I are going to Amsterdam. So in a couple of weeks, we're heading over to Integrated Systems Europe, ISE, which is February 9th through 12th in Amsterdam. And I'm very excited because this is my first time attending ISE, and it's your first time as well. And even better, we found out we're on the same flight back to Philly.
So excited.
So I wanted to ask you, you know, you're excited about the show, I'm sure. And are there, what are you expecting to get out of the show? Are there certain, obviously, I know you're going to go check out the unmanned aircraft and drone stuff that they have going on over there. Are there other technologies that you're interested in seeing while you're there?
So I have to give a plug in for my, I'm going to go over there with Stampede Global. And they're the ones who are sponsoring the unmanned aircraft pavilion, the drone cage, right? So I'm fortunate that the booth I'm at is going to be nothing but drones. So I'm super excited about that. Stop by Stampede Global booth if you're there. But what I'm interested in, which is kind of odd, right? Because here I am, this pilot and everything, is the
boats.
User experience. Yeah, yeah, right? So, what I'm interested in is seeing the same products that are sold in the United States, what they look like for the European market, right? So are the colors different? Is the shape different? What is that? And I'm kind of interested in the European market from a marketing. I love marketing. I'm multifaceted, right? Don't worry. She only needed one guest today because I have like these split personalities is what you're going to learn. She's really got like five people on today. It's just me, right?
I mean, from three different military branches alone, right?
Yeah,
you know what? It's interesting you bring that up because that I'm somewhat interested in that as well because whenever I'm overseas, whether it's Europe or Asia, and I am always fascinated by cars. Because you'll have the same model cars here that look completely different. Or then they have maybe four versions of that car in Europe and only one version here. So I'm sure the same thing is going to be happening with technology, whether, you know, maybe a projector looks the same or not, or if they, you know, just have it completely different, you know, which is pretty neat. Like that I think is going to be very cool. And I think like I'm interested to see how they're marketing for things as well there. I think from what I understand, they don't call them booths. I think they call them stands over there. So I'm sure I'm going to get caught up in, you know, saying the wrong things for certain words, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of going to be interesting. And considering what Stampede Global is doing with unmanned aircraft with the integration of AV, I'm going to be curious as to the message that Stampede Global has it for the European market. How are they going to, win the hearts and minds of a different culture, of a different set of morals and mores? And I'm not saying that they have different morals than us, but you know what I'm talking about when you talk about mores and cultural experience. How are they going to take the product that's being sold in the United States and packaged in one way and packaging it and selling it in a whole different market? I'm really interested to see that.
So if you have the chance to fly any unmanned aircrafts while you're there in Amsterdam, I assume you're going to take that challenge?
I am. I've already started, pardon me, I've already started researching some of the rules and regulations and may the odds be ever in my favor is all I can say because it doesn't look promising for the home team. But this is something that if you're listening to this podcast and you're talking about drones, one of the things that we noticed from CES 2016 was the foldable drone. Okay. And as I'm heading over to ISE and going to Amsterdam, I have, we all know, my unique Q500. the box is huge. It is a huge box. I don't even know if I can get that thing on as a carry-on. However, and it's because the aircraft doesn't fold in on itself. It's this big aircraft, and even though it's relatively small, when you talk about shipping something or putting it in your carry-on luggage or getting it to another country, it's not very easy. So what I'm interested in is trying to find myself, which I love, a company called ProDrone, and it's the ProDrone Ghost. One of the things I really liked about CES 2016 with this aircraft was it folded up small enough to fit in a backpack, yet it's powerful enough to lift a rather large DSLR camera with 13 minutes flight time. And all in all, it had about 30 minutes flight time. It was a beautiful aircraft. And as I'm going to Amsterdam, those are the things I have to think about, right? You have to go, am I going to, and even a DJI Phantom, as you have to unscrew the, you know, the propellers, and you got to fit it in its backpack, and you got to do all of that stuff. It's relatively small, but is it as small as it can be? And it's not. And that's one of the things I really like about this ProDrone, the Ghost Drone, and there are some other drones, and I don't mean to single out any one company, but it's something that that people need to really start thinking about, is how portable are these aircraft, especially when you want to go to another country without packing a whole bunch of stuff. And here's the other thing. Amsterdam is cold, which means we have to pack, you know, we're not packing shorts and a t-shirt.
You're worried about packing drones. I'm worried about packing boots and coats and how many hats.
Right. So we're already limited on our luggage because we have to carry, you know, because we have to, especially in case people don't know, Krista and I are planning on going roller skating while we're there. So which means we have to pack like outer coats and hats and gloves.
So if you have a drone that you brought, you could get through and that has a camera, I suggest you watch us roller skate while it's cold in Amsterdam.
We need a GoPro. So those are the things that I need to think about. So if you're manufacturing an unmanned aircraft, think about that. Think about the portability of your aircraft and people being able to take it on planes, put it in their car and take it somewhere. I did not take my Unique with me. My husband and I went on a trip and we took our dogs in the truck, and that aircraft, the box, I was like, gosh, I just.
Well, I have a question then too about that. You know, there's so many, there's so many regulations about what you can take as a carry-on. What about the blades on the drones? Or can they be carried on, or can they be considered, you know, as a weapon?
We're not talking about that.
Okay. I mean, I'm just thinking. It was just like what popped in my head because, you know, you accidentally have like a little tiny baby pocket knife, or you have like, you know, nail clippers in your pocket by accident and, you know, oh no, stuff, you know, is going.
Yeah. When you're talking about these carbon fiber blades, mm-hmm. they can do some damage. They really can. So this just lets you know, it's funny that the same company, you know, the same organization, the FAA, is, you know, even though, you know, we have TSA and Department of Homeland Security is really in charge of checking our luggage and everything. The FAA, this overarching organization hasn't even thought about, can these blades get through? Because we all know this, the majority of people at the FAA and the Unmanned Aircraft Integration Office don't fly unmanned aircraft. I know Jim Ryan does. He's amazing. He's a big advocate of it. But when you don't know the industry, you don't think of that stuff.
I'm just envisioning, you know, somebody trying to bring home a drone for their kid or whatever, and it getting confiscated. And who knows? Maybe it hasn't yet, but it's just, you know, I'm always thinking of those thoughts of the what ifs of the, you know, what if you can't bring your stuff with you?
That's what happens with the new industry. Is I never get old of the what ifs because somebody always throws a curveball at me, and I just go, I'm supposed to be the expert, and I never even thought of that. That's a, you know, it's a great question.
Yeah. So you have so much military background. And so, you know, you watch TV, you watch movies. So I'm really curious, you know, what Hollywood movie that you've seen provides the best depiction, in your opinion, of military service, whether, you know, it's, you know, a person dealing with, you know, being in the military, or if it's, you know, actual military scenes.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, Chris has sent me some questions beforehand, and this was one of them. And you know what's funny? The answer is Spaceballs.
Oh, it was the big helmet. I knew it.
Spaceballs. So, you know, that's a, and I really kind of went back and forth with that. And I have to say, so I'm, when I deployed, I was part of the 29th ID. And for those who don't know 29th ID, and specifically that was with the both times I deployed, we actually kind of fell under the 29th ID both times. And the second time I fell under the 116th. Those are the guys who landed at Omaha Beach for World War II on D-Day. And so I always go back to Saving Private Ryan. It's near and dear to my heart. It was so accurate. It was just an amazing, you know, it really told a great story. But it's really hard because what people don't understand, people don't understand how much we joke in the military, you know, and I think it's because we're so serious during those quick moments. You know, sometimes it's 5 seconds. You have to be super serious. You're trying to land. You're trying to, you know, whatever you're doing, you're in that moment. The rest of the time, funny mofos, I'm telling you right now, some of the funniest people I've ever met are in the military. They're just super funny. And I think it's because it's the only way that you can kind of deal with it sometimes. I think it's the only way that you can deal with everything else that's going on. You're in the mud. You're in the muck. It's cold and you're hungry. And if you can't laugh and you can't start making fun of what's going on, you're going to drive yourself crazy. And I think that's one of the reasons why I said Spaceballs is because it's so funny and it's so true that, we have those moments and it's not all serious all the time.
So then on the flip side of that, what would you consider one of the worst depictions of a military movie?
Spaceballs.
Excellent. So it's the best and the worst at the same time.
It is. The best and the worst. The worst, I don't want to call anybody out here. So, there are probably a lot of really bad military movies out there, but I had to say Spaceballs. I know it's funny.
No, that's good. Well, you know, it was funny because I was talking earlier today. At work, we were talking about drag racing, you know, funny cars, all that, like, and how loud, if you've ever been to a drag race, it's super loud. So you got to wear earplugs and sometimes even throw cans on top of it. And then I was relating that to, you know, if you're ever have been on a firing range and you're shooting guns, how immensely loud that is as well, especially depending upon the guns that are being fired. And nearly every time you're watching a TV show or a movie and somebody, like, you know, oh, the killer dropped his gun and the lady picked up the gun and has never fired one before, somehow wounds him or kills him. And yet she's not deaf. Like, she was able to pull off the kill shot, you know, but then is not befuddled because, you know, the loud sound. So that was just my correlation of how, you know, movies don't always capture the reality of things.
Yeah. Well, imagine firing one out of a, you know, out of a C-130 Spectre or a, you know, a Blackhawk, you know, when you're firing out of, you know, you have the engine noise and you have the, you know, the firing. It gets pretty loud. But we're funny about it. So you don't even notice, right? Yeah. You got your crew chiefs back there firing it in their mic. They're like, pew, 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 pew. if you're just at a training exercise or something, you know, your crew chiefs, I have to give a big shout out to crew chiefs out there. They bust their butts. And man, they just make everything so much fun, though. They really do.
So the last thing I want to talk about with you is I want to give you a shout out for your sweet new headphones. You got some gold Beats.
Yes. And some Beats by Dre Studio.
I'm quite jealous.
They're beautiful.
And so maybe, you know, when the new iPhone 7 comes out, might be compatible for you.
Right. So for those who don't know, I'm an Apple junkie. I have in our household, we have two shuffles. We have two iPods. We have two Macs. We have two iPhones. I just bought an iPad, by the way, which I lost. If anybody can find my iPod,
you know where it is. I'll tell you where it is. It's at Corey Moss's house because he lost his and then stole yours.
Probably. So I'm a big Apple. I love Apple because I like everything just to kind of be able to sync. I don't want to have to, you know, worry about anything not being able to sync. It's just easy. But the rumor is the new Apple 7 might not have the phone jack. So when I bought my new headsets, it was important that I get some wireless headsets. And I wanted noise canceling, but Bose, no noise canceling wireless headsets. Sennheiser, which I tried at CES 2016. By the way, if you want to sponsor me, I would love a set of your headphones, but at $500, just not an option. So I thought I'd try these Beats by Dre. We'll see what happens. And they're jamming. The gold, jamming. If you guys could see us, if this wasn't just a podcast, and it was one time we're going to video it.
I'm just saying, if you bring them on the airplane, they may not make it to DC from Philly. Just saying.
All right, I will fall asleep. I'll make sure I got them. I have a tile. Yeah.
Cool. So I want to thank you very much, Christina, for coming on and talking unmanned aircraft and drones. Talking about, what you're looking forward to at ISC in Amsterdam, because, the whole unmanned aircraft and drones thing, I think a lot of people still don't quite understand it. I mean, I think I might understand half of it, but it's very intriguing to me because it's not going away, and it's something that I think is going to continue to be a part of our lives for a while. Like, I remember when iPads were, sort of coming into the corporate space. It wasn't just the thing you used when you sat on your couch at home surfing around. And I'm just like, oh, wow, really? You're going to have some, personal products come into the commercial world? And that's sort of how I view the drones as well. Is it's something that will be implemented more and more. We just have to think of how we're going to use them. Sure, you're not going to have drones flying around in a corporate space per se, unless you can program them to bring you coffee, but there, there's a plethora of other uses that we can have for them.
Yeah, well, real quick, the big news on the street is that the Dallas Cowboys just received a Section 333 exemption to fly an unmanned aircraft during their practices, and that's a big deal. So if you think about AV integration, now you have this drone filming practice. So you're going to want to live stream it to anybody who wants to watch that, live, obviously. You're going to record it for later on, for use later on. So when you start thinking about drones and AV integration, think about what other people are doing right now. And you're right, it's not going to be everywhere, but it's going to be in some places, and we have to figure out how do we integrate it.
Yes, absolutely. So thanks again for joining me. And I want to thank you listeners for taking the time to listen in on our discussion. Hopefully you learned something new today. I'm sure you have. I did. So thanks for tuning in, and I will see you next time, or talk to you next time. Okay.